Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rates and Lanes podcast. We ride again tonight. I want to thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to join us. Me and my co-host, Chuck Snow, will be joining us here in just a second. Going to go ahead and get started tonight with the USDA fruit and vegetable truck rate report. Have a little bit of movement on this week's report, not as much as last week's, but there's still some bright spots to be had on the USDA truck rate report. So checking in, we got slight shortages going on in San Joaquin Valley, California, Eastern North Carolina, and Columbia Basin, Washington. Those are the three areas where we have slight shortages of trucks available. So there may be opportunity to be had there on the spot market in those particular areas. Areas that you might want to avoid, areas that are showing that there is slight surplus, is Mexico Crossing through Nogales, Arizona. Right now it's showing that it is at a slight surplus. So you might want to, if you're working that spot market, you might want to make sure you already get, if you're delivering there, you might want to make sure you already got something lined up to pick up to get out of there, or you got other plans or other methods of accomplishing whatever your game plan is if you're headed into that area. Jumping over, moving into this week's DAT Trend Lines report, we have no change in the price of diesel fuel for the over the past week. So diesel fuel stays at a national average of $3.07 per gallon, which is a good thing, holding steady. 8 days into December, this report covers from December 2nd through the 8th. So 8 days into December, the national average van rate jumped up to $1.94 per mile on average. That's an 11 cents high. That's 11 cents higher than the number than the November average. I'm sorry. And the load truck ratio for vans doubled compared to the previous week, due to pent up demand following the shortened holiday work week. So we have a little bit of movement in the spot market. Rates are starting to loosen up a little bit, and we are getting a little bit of a holiday rush, it looks like. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to kind of delve into the Celadon bankruptcy as well. So it's going to be interesting to try to see how all this will correlate. But taking a deeper dive and looking at the spot market average rates for dry vans over the previous week, beginning out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have average outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $165. Moving down into the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have outbound rates showing at $181. Coming out of the Midwest, we show outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $213. Moving out of the south central portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates for dry vans are showing at $171. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market drive-in rates at $185. Jumping over to the flatbed segment of the DAT report, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates are reporting in at $204 per mile. We have an average outbound spot market rate in the southeastern mid-Atlantic states for flatbeds at $216. Coming out of the Midwest, we show outbound spot market rates at $2.31 per mile. Coming out of the south central portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.06. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, showing at $1.90 per mile. And jumping into the temperature controlled or reef portion of the DAT report, moving out of the northeast, we show outbound spot market rates at $187. Coming out of the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, we show outbound spot market rates at $198. Coming out of the Midwest, outbound spot market rates are $2.60 per mile. Keeping the tradition of the Midwest leading all segment types for the outbound spot market rate. Moving down into the the South Central portion of the United States, outbound spot market reefer rates at 205. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market reefer rates at 228. With that being said, let me go ahead and get my co-host up and on board with us, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, how are you this evening?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
Doing great. Cannot complain. Kind of got taken by storm a little earlier over the weekend with all of the supplies going on.
Rico, you're breaking up pretty badly.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
Well, that's better, whatever you just did.
Okay. Well, hopefully we got that rectified. Hopefully it wasn't that bad during the reports. But anyway,
it wasn't at all.
Got word back this week talking about seeing what happened with transpired with the Celadon situation and the bankruptcy. When did you first start hearing rumblings of what may have been coming down the pike, or was this just kind of all of a sudden for everybody?
Well, I heard rumblings that things weren't good. Now, they had there had been a, let's just call it an incident, where some of their top brass had fudged numbers when they were being traded publicly a few years ago. And there was a lot of rhetoric in trade rags, and they had been delisted as a public company. And then word came out on Friday, I think it was, that three of those executives were going to be getting jail time. Now, they had put another CEO in place and some other management, of course, but they had also, because of the behavior of those three, Celadon was given a huge fine. It was somewhere close to $40 million. And really, you know, that's more money than anybody can bear. They were one of the largest carriers in North America, well, in the United States anyways, and I guess even in Canada, they're fairly large. I think they were around number 32 in last year with revenue at $1 billion or fairly close to it altogether. Now, they've been selling off pieces of the company. They sold off their intermodal. They sold off a truck brokerage. When companies start selling off their assets like that, it's kind of like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Now, sometimes they will do that in order to strengthen their balance sheet, and sometimes that influx of cash will help them get over a tough hump, and that happens in business. But it certainly made people starting to be, to be aware. And we've been using them right up into the end, both Celadon and their Canadian branch, Heinemann, who I go back from the first trip I ever took in a truck. I ran back. We were supposed to load with a Heinemann team, which is a long story, in Saskatchewan. And then we ran back with these guys, and that's back in 1974. That's when I first met them. And they were predominantly a cattle hauling company back then in those days, because times were different, and they slaughtered all the meat in the Toronto area. And Heinemann would take loads of doors and other products, and eventually even hauling for Kmart in cattle pods. They were pretty innovative, and they were sold. Heinemann was sold to Celadon some years ago, and that was one of the anchors that made Celadon Canada. I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago when it was sold. And but we've heard rumblings on and off, but I didn't take them too serious. I really thought they would get through them. And one of the business writers because I've read a lot of stuff on this since the weekend, and one of the business writers that I read an article that they had been quoted on said that they could have made it had it not been for this fine. They would have made it. But that's the way it goes. It's too bad. a great company is gone, and you know, a lot of people looking for work. I think they had, I think altogether, close to 4,000 employees. So they're, you know, they're definitely a player in the marketplace. Unfortunately, and
yes, from the headlines that I'm reading, says nearly 3,000 truck drivers jobless.
Yeah. Now they won't be jobless for long. You know, they'll all have other jobs fairly quickly, but they're going to, you know, most of those individuals are going to miss at least a week's work, and especially before Christmas, that hurts. Hurts any time.
Yeah, it says, and you're right, it's poised to be the largest trucking bankruptcy in history, according to Freightways, which broke the story early on Friday, because they just filed, they filed for bankruptcy on Monday.
Yeah.
Nearly 3,000 truck drivers stranded away from home. The company assured truck drivers in an internal message after midnight on Monday that it would not be stranded, that they would receive full payment for their work. It's kind of interesting, where I parked in Atlanta, there were a couple of Celadon trailers that were left there abandoned, and they were in the process of getting those towed out of there.
Yeah, I guess
I've seen a bunch of stories of people offering help with trying to get drivers home, with getting them fuel and everything to get drivers home as well. I've seen a lot of stuff on social media as far as that was concerned.
Well, my understanding was that fuel cards were not turned off. They were still able to buy fuel to get home, which is certainly a different story than we saw a few years ago. If you remember back, I think it was called Aero Transport
Aero,
or Aero Trucking. And it was around this time of year again. And they stranded people all over America. These guys, as always, they went out with class. I got to give them credit. And part of it is, it's a, I guess the term of bankruptcy is, they did a little bit different. They didn't cease all operations. There were two operations that are still running. One is Jaguar out of Mexico that's owned by them, and another is I think it's Taylor Transport out of down your neck of the woods. I think down the Carolinas somewhere, and they're going to be selling off those two companies. So because because those two companies are viable, they didn't leave anybody stranded, which is great for it's great for all the drivers. I'm happy for them.
Right. So I'll just kind of go over and read over the details here. It says Indianapolis-based Celadon, a trucking carrier that grossed $1 billion as recently as 2015, filed for bankruptcy on December 9th. It's poised to be the largest trucking bankruptcy in history. Leading industry publication Freightways reported on Friday. While Chapter 11 filings implies that Celadon will restructure, the company is in fact shuttered. We have diligently explored all possibilities and options to restructure Celadon and keep business operations ongoing. However, a number of legacy and market headwinds made this impossible to achieve. CEO Paul, I'm going to butcher that last name.
Zeeland or something.
Said in a statement. Yeah, Zeeland. And the company's drivers and employees are getting slammed. Nearly 4,000 employees are suddenly jobless weeks before the holiday. The bankruptcy has the potential to leave nearly 3,000 truck drivers stranded away from home, while the company has assured truck drivers that will not happen. Some truck drivers have told business insiders that they have had to take matters into their own hands to get home. Celadon employs 2,500 truck drivers and works with 380 owner-operators. The shuttering also leaves some 1,300 administrative employees, most of whom worked in Celadon's Indianapolis headquarters, jobless right before the holidays. An internal document shared with business insiders revealed that employees lost health care insurance before learning that the company was closing. They also will not receive unused vacation pay. Celadon sent a message shortly after midnight on December 9th informing truck drivers that the company was filing for Chapter 11 and all those in transit would be delivered according to images shared with Business Insider. Celadon did not immediately respond to Business Insider's request for comment. Wow.
Wow. Quite a mess. And, you know, we've never seen one of this size go under. It just shows you how volatile our world is, you know, in the trucking business, that somebody that size, you know, they did a, you know, in their heyday, they did $1 billion in assets, in sales. Now, granted, because they sold off some of their divisions, they didn't hit that number this year. But still, you know, I'm sure their sales must have been probably pretty close to $700 or $800 million. It shows nobody's immune.
Well, I'm looking here at the bankruptcy file and the actual paperwork, and it is a this balance is out of this world. It's almost total $5 billion with a B.
What? Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at it wrong.
Okay.
Check that. Five million. I didn't see the decimal point. I didn't see the decimal point. That's why I thought it was. $5 billion. $5,443,000 is the total, as far as the bankruptcy filing is the paperwork that was filed in U.S. bankruptcy court.
Yeah, and then there's that $40 million or $37 million fine and everything else. See what happened. There was when you start having to defend yourself, especially against the government, whether you're right or wrong, and you have to hire the best lawyers. And, you know, and the company was on the ropes, and the company took their eye off the prize because their business concentration should have been on building their business and maintaining their business and looking after their customers, looking after their drivers, looking after their trucks. That's what the business they're in. And suddenly, because of three really dumb executives who thought they would get away with this nonsense, company gets in trouble and has to defend themselves. And you know, when you're in any type of legal proceedings, you have to defend yourself. And in this case, here's a very large company. They probably, I'm sure most likely, used some of the best legal minds in the country to defend themselves against these charges. And top management is spending their time and effort in the courtroom, not in the boardroom. And this is what happens. They weren't able to concentrate on business. And if you look at all their competition, those people were in their boardrooms and they were planning their next strategic move, which in a lot of cases was probably taking some of Celadon's customers because they knew the weakness.
So I want to give our listeners, if anybody wants to join in on the discussion, just press number one. That lets us know that you would like to get in on the discussion as well. But I'm reading more and more data and facts that are surrounding this whole Celadon situation, and it's a bleak outlook to an already dismal 2019, and it's getting, you know, some of the bullet points that they have here. America's some of the fallout, along with Celadon, America's largest truck engine manufacturer, just announced 2,000 layoffs, and another sign of the trucking bloodbath that is continuing, that's slamming the $800 billion industry. Truckers are becoming more and more pessimistic about the U.S. economy. Truckers can't pay off their fuel cars, and it's a sure sign that more trucking bankruptcies are coming. I don't know how long I can stay in business. Trucker fears have soared to recession-level highs. Truckers say Amazon's new logistics empire is being underpinned by low, ridiculous rates that are some are refusing to work for them. The leading industry group for truck drivers has declared we're hurtling towards a trucking bloodbath. So this is, you know, not to be doom and gloom, but definitely it's time to make sure that you are building your war chest and that you are not to prevent yourself from becoming a casualty of such things, and make sure that you are sitting back and doing your numbers and crunching your numbers and keeping your cost per mile and everything in perspective. Of course, cutting cost as much as you possibly can. But the other thing is, where does this opportunity, is there opportunity that may lie from potential customers that are that now need service? And Chuck, I'm gonna throw, I'm kind of setting that up for you to kind of take us down that road as far as what kind of silver lining may we may be able to find from all of this.
Well, first of all, I think it's a great lesson for everybody to keep their eye on the prize. With the closing of Celadon, it is going to be, you know, there's not going to be tons of extra freight that we're all going to see. Now, we may see, we're going to see a little bit of a blimp because of the time of year it's happened. We're already short of trucks because it's Christmas. We have, the mail order, the last mile fulfillment. We have mail. We have all sorts of things that are, you know, groceries, all sorts of products that are getting, have to get to market. And then you add all the work that 3,000 trucks did into the mix, and that all hits the spot market. So I would guess that next week when you do the report, we're going to see a real uptick in the spot market. But that's going to be short-lived until, you know, the holiday. Once that happens, then it'll be back to normal. So my best advice, number one, you gave some good advice, keep your costs down. While you keep your costs down, don't forget about maintenance, because a lot of times people will overlook maintenance, which is crucial. Because if you don't look after stuff, it ain't going to look after you. So, you know, make sure you're still running safely. And third of all, make sure, and this is what happens in these times, we get scared. And people do silly stuff when we're scared. It's human nature. Steady. That's all my best advice. Just go at it steady. Pick something that isn't going to change your business model. Don't try to change it overnight, unless it's to make things better. Don't think you're going to solve your problem. If you're one of our listeners and you're based out of New Jersey, and somebody offers you a great load into South Florida or into Colorado, places like that where there aren't a lot of backhauls, just do the math. You know, again, you know, we've talked about it before. We're in such a numer-centric business. Are they offering you enough money to run from New Jersey to Colorado and then probably empty from Colorado back into Kansas somewhere or into Nebraska? Because that's what you're going to need. You don't want to get stuck in Denver, Colorado with a flatbed, or in Miami with a flatbed and not have enough money to get back into a good freight area. If you can, pick a steady lane. Just like you have, Rico, you have proven our model and you're successful at it. The fewer the miles, the more money you get per mile. The shorter the trip. So my best advice to our listeners is pick a lane that's short and run that lane if you can. Let the brokers know, let the customers know on both sides what you're doing, where you're going, and you'll make it through this. This isn't this is a trucking recession right now. You know, I've heard whether we're going to go into a full recession or not. We're certainly due for it. We've had the longest economic prosperity that we've ever had. There's a lot of signals saying recession. Other people are saying, no, you don't get a recession on an election year. They won't allow it. They'll plug every hole to make sure it doesn't happen. And I've certainly seen that before. And as soon as the next president, whether it's this current president or a new administration gets inaugurated in January, then you know what, all hell breaks loose, and that, you know, that's a possibility. Who knows? But you know, that's what we have to look forward to. We talked about this, Rico, if you remember, last January. Things were still relatively good, and you and I talked about things slowing down a little bit in trucking. And I remember my wife listened to our podcast, and she said to me after, "Why are you and Rico so negative? You know, things aren't that bad." And I said, "Well, they're going to be, you know." And she said to me today, "Boy, you called that one right. How did you know?" And it's because
we don't mean to come across negative. We're just trying to kind of get everyone prepared. And it's not necessarily being negative. I don't think that. I think it's more so of being prudent. Just trying to be prudent about the whole situation, because we are smaller. Most of our, of course, our listeners are smaller. And by us being smaller, we can't absorb some of the different trials and tribulations that come down the pike. Some things can be, some things by us being small can knock us right on out off the block. So we have to be diligent and really prudent about and pragmatic about our course of actions.
100%. You know, there's some real great things about being small. And number one, the only thing is, most of the small carriers that are listening don't have a huge multi-million dollar war chest built up. That's for sure. But on the other hand, most of our listeners are pretty nimble, and they can change things
right
on a dime. Pretty hard, I can tell you, from even running we're not a big carrier, but you get into contracted rates. And, you know, it's funny, when you have a contract normally with a shipper, they seem to be one-sided. They can throw you out the door pretty quickly for a number of things, including somebody coming by with a better rate. But as a carrier, you don't normally have that, you don't have that luxury of being able
right
to get out of those contracts. I remember I had a contract with a client of mine to haul from Toronto up to Northern Ontario, and I had arranged for some backhauls from Northern Ontario down to the States, and we did it for about 6 months. And my dispatcher and I were talking one day, and he says, "This is really a pain in the neck, and this isn't worth it because we're tying up so many trailers." So I went back to the customer, and I'll tell you what, they held my feet to the fire. They said, "Well, you told us you would, and you're doing it." And luckily, I was able to find a carrier from Northern Ontario and put him in our position so we could stop losing money on it. But, you know, customers will do that. So remember, those big guys, like, you know, the top carriers, they sign contracts with these companies and they have to honor them no matter what. And even when things were really good back 2 years ago and these companies had contracts to haul for $2.10 and our listeners were getting $4 a mile at the time, they had to stick with those $2.10 a mile contracts in some cases.
So we got a caller that wants to get in on the conversation here. Caller from the 912 area code. You're up live with Rico and Chuck. What's
hey,
your name?
I
Where
do
you
appreciate
calling
you guys. Steve and actually, I'm from Montgomery, Alabama.
Right,
I appreciate you guys taking my call. And I'm a type person that I like to watch other people make mistakes, and then from their mistakes, I like to learn from those mistakes to where I don't make those same mistakes, you know, as someone else does. I won't have to go through that fire. And I, you know, watching real close and looking at the news articles and all about Celadon. And And the type person that I am is that I'm really a hands-on guy. I'm a type person that when something needs to get done, I want to be there to make certain that it get done and get done right, and make certain that everything go according to plan. It's just like whenever I file for my authority, I did the research, did everything I needed to do, and instead of paying someone to file my authority, I went in to file my own authority. You know, that's how hands-on I like to be. And my question to you two and to Chuck is that I understand that some things, as you grow bigger, I understand that some things that you're not going to be able to be hands-on. And I want to ask you guys, what do you do or how do you be able to let go of that and trust someone else to do it and make certain that they're doing it right, is so you won't be hovering over them in the process of doing it? Because I know eventually I'm growing and I'm adding on more, and the more I add on and the more that I do, I'm not going to be able to handle all this. I'm going to have to trust someone to do some of the things so that it takes some of the load off of me. And what do you guys do to be able to trust someone so you won't land in the situation like Sella done?
Well, that's a great question, and I thank you for asking it. There's two things. Number one, you have to hire the right person. That's number one. And number two, you need to train them. It's, you know, you've brought up great points, because the only way you can grow your business is you've got to be able to delegate. Business, one of the things I have learned myself is you don't have a business unless it's scalable. And
right.
if you do everything yourself, your business isn't worth anything. So
yeah.
You've got to, you know, at some point, Steve, you may build up a big enough business where you want to sell it. And
yeah.
If you do everything, and I will remind our listeners of a story. I don't know if I've ever told it on air, but there was a gentleman that used to do work for us. He did LTL going into the Pacific West, Oregon, Seattle, those areas. And he came in one day and he said, "You know, Chuck, I want to sell out." And I said, "Okay, what do you got to sell?" And I think he had about 7 or 8 trucks. And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" You know, and he did LTL, which is like partial loads, there and back. And he had a good little business. He had nice equipment. And I said, "Well, tell me about your overhead." And he said, "Well, the shop costs this much a month, and the warehouse costs this much a month." I said, "What about labor? How much are you spending a month on shunt, like for your shunt driver?" He said, "Nothing. I do the shunting." And I said, "What about local cartage?" He said, "Well, I do it all." And I said, "Well, and what do you spend a month on mechanics?" He said, "Well, I do it all." And then I said, "Well, how much do you spend for a bookkeeper?" He said, "I do that." And turned out he was a one-man band. No wonder he was making $400,000 a year 20 years ago. He did probably six people's work.
Right.
So that made his business not worth anything, or not worth very much. And you don't want to be that guy. So as you grow, the first thing you need to do is you need to have an assistant that you can mentor and you can train. You're still driving, I take it?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. How many trucks are you running?
Right now, I only have one truck, 3 trailers. I was the guy that called you guys about I got the 2 trailers for $1,200 from a repo from a bank.
Yes, yes. You're a good operator, man. I think you should do, you know, you'll do very well.
Reason why I ask is because I seen another repossessed truck that I done got my coins together where I'll be able to go in. It's a 2016 Cascadia Freightliner that the bank was letting go for like $20,000, and it got like 600,000 miles on it, and I was going to go in and pay cash for it. And I have a second, you know, growing my fleet debt free. And that's the reason why I asked.
You know, the price sounds really good. I want to warn you, Steve, and our other listeners, there's going to be a lot of trucks, used trucks on the market starting now. Matter of fact, there'll be some internationals coming on the market probably in the next month. I would hold back, okay, if I were you. This is a lousy time of year to do it. Keep your powder dry. Keep that $20,000 in the bank. You might just wait another. If you don't need the truck today, don't buy it.
Right, I got you.
And I think you may find, you know, one of those internationals coming up. Remember, they're going to flood the market, just that company alone. They're the first. Now, granted, and I'm sure they are the biggest that's gone, and they'll probably be, hopefully, they're the biggest that goes. But there will be a lot more following them. The market is going to be glutted. Now, when you have a glut in a market of used trucks, you need to have a market outside of North America. So I don't know, you know, with the trade embargo, I don't know how many of those trucks will end up in China. I don't know, you know, I don't know how many are going to end up in Mexico. So, you know, a lot of them, you know, if we end up with somewhat of a world slowdown, which can happen because everybody's holding hands. We have a global economy. And there may not be any market outside of, you know, any better market outside of North America for these newer trucks. You know, that the developing world has a huge appetite for used trucks, but they won't be buying anything as new as the 2016. Places like Africa and parts of Asia, they will, and parts of South and Central America, there seems to be a fairly brisk appetite for much older iron that is pre-emission, not for any laws against emission, just because so many companies now are demanding that trucks be greener. Especially your larger shippers are putting right on the questionnaire what year are your trucks, because they have a green footprint. And, you know, so those older trucks are ending up in places like Africa. You'll see pictures all the time, you know, and you'll recognize some of the trucks from some of our largest fleets in North America. You know, and all of a sudden you'll see a cream color cab over from J.B. Hunt from the 90s. And it's still working somewhere in Zaire or some country over in Africa. So I would just hold back. I think there's going to be a lot of trucks and trailers on the market starting now and continuing for the next, I don't know, it depends on who you listen to. I was telling Rico earlier, I listened to a podcast earlier this week by Noel Perry, who's one of the economists for the trucking industry. And
right, I listened to him also.
Did you listen to that podcast the other day?
I don't think I got that section of it.
Okay. There was one the other day, his monthly one that he does through Let's Truck. And, and I listened to it. And, you know, we are going to, you know, we're going to have a bit of a bloodbath here for a while. You know, expect this. And, you know, basically keep your powder dry. That's what he's saying. Don't spend money. The same stuff that Rico and I have been saying. And you're going to come out fine on the other end. And if you do need that other truck to grow your businesses, the best time to grow your trucking business is just as we're starting to come out of this recession. Remember, we are always the first ones into it and the first ones out of it. So.
Right.
You know, we're getting into the we're getting right into the storm now. You'll be able to buy very well even towards the end of the storm, and that's when you want to start grabbing equipment. And you just have to keep an eye on things. You know, Steve, you you sound like you've been at this a while. And we have all this wonderful data that we never used to have. You know, we have we have access to tools today that have become available in the last 10 years that we never had. We used to have to bump and grind in the dark in order to, you know,
that's true.
Was how you, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. We have, you know, it started about, don't quote me, but about 10, 12 years ago with some of the work that Kevin Rutherford was doing. You know,
right.
he was probably one of the first, certainly a pioneer in the field. And, you know, you know, all we had before that was Transport Topics, which is still a great publication. I'm not here to knock them, but, you know, and some of the other publications, Commercial Carrier Journal. But now companies like DAT, they're taking this data and they're mining it and they're making it available to us. And now we have freight waves. I don't know, do you subscribe to that at all?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. There's some great stuff on there, some great analytical stuff. And it doesn't tell you everything, but it gives you enough where it sheds light on things and we don't have to crash into things during the dark. You know, it just sheds enough light, and sometimes it's totally enlightening. You know, there's Transport Topics Radio. We have a satellite radio. We have so many. My God, if you listened and read everything, you wouldn't have time to drive your truck or to work.
Yeah, that's true.
So we
it
can,
is true,
so I think that just keep doing what you're doing. Look for that person that at some point you can hire. And no offense against anybody, but sometimes that assistant that you want will not have a CDL. They will have nothing to do. Some of the best people that we have ever brought on to this company, including operations people, in some cases, when they joined Traffix, they didn't know a truck from a bowling ball.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what happens is, listen, it's happened the other way where you bring somebody in with a CDL and they know all the tricks and they're really good. Other times you bring somebody in that's an ex-driver and they've got a lot of bad habits and they, you know, they constantly take the side of the driver. And you're not able to do that in an office environment. You've got to be fair. You can't take just the side of the shipper. So when the driver calls in after waiting 6 hours to get offloaded, you know, and your person says to them, well, just keep waiting. You know, you want somebody that's sympathetic and understands, but you've got to walk that, you got to walk that balance because you can't call the customer screaming and yelling every time either, or you'll lose your customer.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, that's one of the situations that I'm in. I'm doing a dedicated account and it,
right.
And it's almost like, you know, I go out, turn around and come back in, you know, drop a hook on both ends. And I can take more lanes in what I'm doing. And for a long time, I didn't take those lanes because I want to make certain that whenever I say I'm going to do something, I want to give you great quality customer service in doing it. And so, you know, and I felt like it, you know, right now I'm not ready for it because I don't have the extra truck. You know, I got the trailer, but I don't have the extra truck and I won't accept that lane. But once I get that on board, I can really see things beginning to start growing as far as my business concerned. And so, you know, I'm definitely taking in what you were saying, just waiting till we on the verge of getting out of this recession to purchase the second truck. I'm taking that in.
Well, good. Let me ask you something. The customer that you're dealing with right now, do you see them slowing down at all during an economic slowdown with the commodity you're hauling?
Well, it's one of the biggest beverage company in the world. So
okay.
No,
they're
speeding up. Yeah.
Chances are no. Okay. Well, then, you know what?
Yep.
You may be in a better situation than most people because when people aren't working, they're consuming things like beverages. I know that up here in Canada, we have every corner has a donut coffee shop. You know, that's just, and when people aren't working, they're in those coffee shops drinking coffee.
Right.
So it's a recession-proof business.
Okay, and I really do appreciate it.
No problem.
We appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Stephen. I'm going to change gears a little bit here, Chuck, if we
go ahead.
If you don't mind, I promised on the Instagram post that I was going to start giving out some of the business credit tips that I was using to help me get started with establishing some business credit. And one of the things, I think that right now is one of those times where, you know, looking at these initial things that we're going to first talk about, these are going to be able to cross-pollinate, so to speak, with your business credit and also your personal credit. You're going to, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to get your personal credit in line, because trying to establish business credit alone will not be a silver bullet, because initially starting out, you will have to personally guarantee. And so you want to work on, and it's not hard, it just takes a little bit of focus. So if you are a person that's right now credit scores are in the 500s, low sixes, it's not very difficult to get you to the 700 club. You're just going to have to be a little diligent. And 700 is generally getting into the 700s, depending on which credit agency that we're talking about. But most banking institutions go off of what they call the Fair Isaac Credit Corporation, or its FICO score. To get your FICO up into the 700, it just going to take a little bit of diligence to do that. But starting out, I want to give a couple of different definitions on some things as far as, like, definition of a net 30. Net 30, that's typically a term that businesses use that speaks of means that the buyer will give the buyer will pay the seller on or before the 30th calendar day in which the invoice was the transaction took place. These services will fully provide a transition time, which includes counting the day that the actual purchase took place. So a net 30 account, there are a lot of businesses out there. Last week I gave a tip to the people that stayed on the line of a company that will give you, if you bought something from them, they will extend you up to $2,500 of a net 30 account business credit if you bought something initially from them. It's an office supply company. So the next definition I want to get into is a revolving account. A revolving credit line is a credit line where the customer pays a commitment fee and then is allowed to use the funds when they are needed. It's usually used in operating purposes and can fluctuate each month depending on the customer's cash flow or needs. So some of the things that you want to do in order to get started with all of this, you have to establish, just like when you get those, I'm pretty sure everybody's gotten those credit card offers in the mail. And in order for people to do that, there's usually something that you signed up for or something like that that puts your name out there on the list. Now, I know that a lot of people hate getting the telemarketing phone calls. But you're going to have to list your business because people are going to have to know that you're out there. So you're going to have to establish your business identity. It's just like when you first got your trucking authority. If anybody knows that when you first get your trucking authority, or when you're coming up for time for renewal for your insurance, you get a million and one different calls from insurance agents. They're paying for a list to kind of to track who's coming up for renewal, who's just signed up for authority that needs to get insurance. So the same thing is going to apply when trying to get business credit established. And the reason why you want them to pursue you or to offer you pre-approved, because a lot of times this goes down as not necessarily a hard credit inquiry on your credit file. most of the times they've done a soft pull, which is a good thing. They've gotten you pre-qualified with the soft pull so you don't incur the actual hard pull on your credit report. Chuck, do you any of this you want to jump in on?
No, just, you know what, you said a lot. It's so, first of all, nobody is going to give your company credit on its own. It's got to be backed by personal signature. So you set up beautifully. Get your personal credit in line because you're going to be co-signing everything. And, you know, get out there and build your credit up and for yourself and then your business. It's really important. And if you do get net 30 from a supplier, pay them quicker, and that's how you build it up.
Right.
So if somebody, let's just say you can get tires on net 30, pay them in 14, even if you have to struggle a little bit, so that all of a sudden when somebody does a credit check, they find out you've got really good credit. That just goes all over the place to help you build your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you want to sit down with this other portion that I want to go into real quickly, and I'm going to cut it off there, and we'll pick back up on some of these things next week. But you want to sit down with your CPA and talk about which, if you haven't already formed your business, you want to talk about which one entity, which business entity has its best perks for you and your operation and for you and your business. And you want to, your CPA is someone that you should not just be talking to just at tax time. You should be constantly consulting them throughout the year, especially when you're talking about making purchases or anything of that nature. They can definitely help you and help you navigate on the different tax implications that each one of these things have. But creating a business entity, they're all different types. There's limited liability corporations or your LLC. There's INC, you know, Inc. There is S corporation. There's C corporation. And each one of these different distinctions have their own distinct advantages. I'm not going to tell you which one is best for you. Your operation. That is something that you definitely need to sit down with your CPA to make sure that you know what your situation is in particular, and establishing that. That way you are setting up. That's the beginning part of setting up to separate your business and your personal asset. So that's the very foundation. It's starting with that business entity, setting those things up so that you can begin to operate in two different modalities. And having saying that, when you're thinking about setting up your company name, and I think we've said this a lot of times, it really doesn't do you a whole lot of good if you're going to name your company after yourself, because
no.
You're tying yourself basically at the hip. Keep it, trying to find a name that is something very distinct, but it's something that is professional, something that you know, it's not too crazy. You don't want to, you know, nothing crazy, nothing funky, no crazy last chance trucking or nothing like that. I mean, you know, think about something that you know. I've seen a lot of people. I've seen all of us have seen crazy names of trucking companies, but that doesn't really look too professional when you're actually looking at. Trying to get, you go and imagine going into a bank and trying to get a $100,000 line of credit with the name like Last Chance Trucking. I mean, you better have a really strong balance sheet.
Yeah. So, and you know what? Even for customers, and even when you drive over a scale, and it's everything, Rico. I always say, you know, and I've said this when I was lecturing at the CMC. You know, you buy a dog and you. A dog lives for 8 to 12 years, you give him or her a good name. For God's sakes, your company may very well outlive you. Take time, give it a unique name. And one of the things I want to add to what you're saying, one of the issues that we're having here, and I think every throughout the industry, there's all sorts of fraud and all sorts of issues because of companies with the same name. or similar names. You know, like, and I'll give you an example. Big Sky Transport, Big Sky Trucking, Big Sky LLC, et cetera, et cetera. Or initials. People, RM Trucking. You know what? Do you know how many RMs there are in America? There's dozens of them. So for gosh sakes, give yourself a unique name that nobody is going to take, and that is identifiable to you and to your company, and it'll serve you well. You know, it just makes it easier for your customers to pay you. It's easier for your banker. It's easier for everybody. And again, don't use your own name, because as you said, Rico, that really attaches you to the hip forever. And we've talked about it before. There was a reefer carrier years ago named Dick Simon Trucking out of Salt Lake City, and one of his drivers, they used to have a skunk painted on the side of their trucks, and they were one of the biggest reefer carriers in America for produce. And one of the drivers had some sort of a anxiety attack or whatever, and tried to drive through the legislative buildings in California. And that was the end of Dick Simon Trucking, and I think Dick Simon. So don't let anything happen to your own name. That's why you want to keep it separate.
Absolutely. And with that being said, tell the good folks how to get in contact with you.
Well, you can call me at 800-388-4352. My extension, 203. You really need to press that extension, 203, or you will not get me. You can email me, chuck@traffix.com. I answer all emails. Listen, sometimes something may get caught in my spam folder, but usually stuff does get through from our listeners. Or you can private message me on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. If you want to get set up with you, I'll hold you by the hand. I'll take you to the right people so you get the right office, because we have several offices in the U.S. and we've got some in Canada as well. And we'll get you hooked up with the right people and get you onto our quick pay system so you get paid right away. And who knows, maybe we can even get you round trip freight. We do have that available in some lanes. So give me a call. I'm glad to help any of our listeners.
Sounds like a plan. Well, we want to thank you guys, ladies and gentlemen, for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on the Rates and Lanes podcast. We will, hopefully, God willing, be back with you again next week. So tell a friend to tell a friend. And be safe out there, everybody. God bless you and good night. And we'll talk to you same time, same place next week.
Catch you on the flip-flop.